VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ana Mateo. This program is for English learners, so we speak a bit slower, and we use words and phrases with English learners in mind. Here are the stories we have for you on today's program. For the Education Report, Dr. Jill Robbins tells us about teaching online. Then, John Russell brings us a story about African cyclists. I will return with words in their stories. The expression, it takes two to tango. And we finish today's show with The Making of a Nation, our ongoing series about U.S. history. But first, here is Jill Robbins.
With many students working on computers from home, teachers are learning new ways to teach their classes. I recently spoke with some English teachers about how they are meeting these demands. The teachers seemed to agree on three issues they now face: how to hold the attention of their students, persuading students to talk in English, and getting them to work with their classmates while being in different places. Wendy Colson is an English language specialist with the United States Department of State. She currently lives in Mexico. Colson is working with English teachers in Myanmar, the country formerly called Burma. She says they tell her that some students do not speak up in class because they are thinking of their social position. She advises the teachers to use a name wheel to overcome this. The free Wheel of Names online computer program lets a teacher add names, then move a wheel to choose which student will speak. One can also add words or pictures to the wheel. Colson says she sometimes adds verbs to give students a chance to make complete sentences. She finds they react well to competition, like playing games with verbs. They are more likely to speak up when she uses the wheel.
They really responded to that because they're, oh, it's me. Okay, I have to speak.
Kimberly Gomez teaches English learners at Centerville High School in the American state of Virginia. She uses Class Dojo, a website teachers can use to work with younger students. It helps the teacher choose a student to speak. Gomez says she also uses the Wheel of Names program. Many teachers say they get tired of being online for long hours during the school day. Lana Viknievich teaches oral communication classes in China. She learned from another teacher that she could record a video to play during her class and ask students to answer questions. I also spoke with Beta Bookman, who teaches at Santa Rosa Junior College in California. She noted it was difficult to make the change from in-person to online teaching. Using the Play Pause It program, Bookman records short videos, each less than 15 minutes. Then, every 1 or 2 minutes, the video stops and the students have time to interact with it.
That interaction could be a question, a conversation for the students to chat with each other. They can write an essay-type answer.
Play Pause It is available in the Canvas Learning Management System, or LMS. Beta Bookman also says she uses many discussion boards in Canvas. She said her students know enough English to read directions and complete their homework online. When she puts students into groups, she teams up more experienced students with newer ones. The experienced students then help explain how to use online programs such as Google Docs. Back in Virginia, Kimberly Gomez does team teaching, a method where two teachers lead the same class. She told me that making time for planning carefully together is necessary. Lana Vignievich says one of her goals is to teach students to use fewer fillers and pauses, or short halts in speaking, when they speak English. She begins each online class with a short warm-up activity, such as a tongue twister, a series of words that are difficult to say quickly and correctly. Her students record themselves on a phone to share with the class and teacher. By comparing their recordings with those of other students, English learners get listening training and experience looking for patterns in language. I'm Jill Robbins.
Now let's hear a story from John Russell.
Wearing bright colors, Andy Costa rides his bicycle in the streets of Abidjan, the capital of the Ivory Coast. He carefully makes his way through the city, trying to avoid cars and trucks. Africa's many crowded cities make it the world's deadliest continent for people who walk and for cyclists, those riding bicycles. That information comes from the World Health Organization. Many African cities have bad roads and no special lanes for bikes. That may soon change. The COVID-19 health crisis has, in some ways, helped African cycling activists. The need to avoid crowded public transportation systems has made government officials more willing to listen to these activists. Last month, Ivorian officials told Andy Costa he could help plan bike lanes in part of Abidjan. Costa had spent around 10 years campaigning for such lanes. "They are part of the solution," said Jacques Gabriel Iwo, mayor of the Central Business District of Plateau. He spoke to the Reuters news agency after meeting with the cycling activist. "Cycling can contribute to the fight against COVID-19 because social distancing is naturally respected," he said. Costa has high hopes. "The goal is to make Africa and the continent cyclable," he said. "A lack of bike lanes and good roads is not the only problem. Kenya's capital, Nairobi, for example, began expanding bicycle lanes 5 years ago. Several more are being built in the heart of Nairobi's business district. But cars often drive into the lanes, and work crews do not always make necessary repairs. Cycling is still dangerous," said Cyprien Odada, an organizer for the Nairobi Office of Critical Mass. In Cape Town, South Africa, cycling activist Lebogang Mokwena used to get 2 or 3 questions a week about teaching people to ride. Since the pandemic arrived, she receives them almost every day. Mokwena has taught about 200 women to ride bicycles in the past 3 years, she said. Some of the women do not have bikes. Some belong to cultures where women do not traditionally ride. Many of the women believe biking is a sport, not a form of transportation, Mokwena said. Black women tend not to be cyclists, not because they don't want to, but because they've never had the opportunity to learn, she said. She only learned to cycle at the age of 30 after moving to New York. Mokwena is Cape Town's bicycle mayor, a name given by the cycling advocacy group Bikes. The group also has mayors in Nairobi, the Ugandan capital Kampala, and Gaborone in Botswana. These mayors build cycling communities and work with local governments. The bicycle is the transport of the future, Costa said. I'm John Russell.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. The tango is a South American dance that is passionate and emotionally intense between two people. Our expression for today's program is, it takes two to tango. So let's do the tango in an expression. Like the tango, some actions or activities take two people. You can't do them alone. Like a fight. Fighting with yourself, whether a verbal argument or a fist fight, would look really silly. And doing the tango by yourself might look silly too. We often use the expression, it takes two to tango, to describe a situation, usually a difficult one, where two people or two parties are equally to blame. We also use this expression when two people or two parties are responsible for getting something done. For example, some reforms in the United States will need both parties to come together. After all, it takes two to tango. Sometimes we shorten this expression by leaving out the subject and say, takes two to tango. Here are more examples. We need to work together on this problem, or we will never find a solution. Like the saying goes, it takes two to tango. This project is too big for one person. I'll help you. Takes two to tango. We have a similar expression. It also means that two people are involved in something. The expression, two can play at that game, means what one person does, another can do too. We use this expression to involve ourselves in the action. We are going to do the same thing that someone else is doing. Let's say someone plays a trick on you. They throw a balloon filled with water at you, and you get soaked. You shout, two can play at that game, and then you throw a water balloon at them. Usually we use this in an I will get you back kind of way. Here's an example.
Look, I know that you want the new job in the design department, so I'm going to tell you something. Something about Daryl.
He wants the job too, doesn't he?
Yes, and he just invited the boss to a football game.
Did he? Well, two can play at that game. I will invite the boss to karaoke night.
I don't think the boss sings.
Oh. Football karaoke?
I don't think that's a thing. But keep thinking.
Now back to our first expression, it takes two to tango. Learning a language is difficult to do alone. So join me here again next week for another Words in Their Stories. After all, it takes two to tango. Until next time, I'm Anna Mateo.
Hey, baby, how about this dance? why? Because it takes two to do this dance. Takes two the tango, two the tango, two to really get the feeling of romance. Let's do the tango, do the tango, do the dance of love.
From VOA Learning English, welcome to The Making of a Nation. I'm Steve Ember. The Mexican-American War officially ended in 1848. Mexico agreed to give California and New Mexico to the United States. And Mexico would recognize the Rio Grande River as the southern border of Texas. Thus, President James K. Polk had succeeded in expanding the United States. He had added Oregon, California, Texas, and New Mexico to the country. Now the country faced the problem of what to do with slavery in the new territories.
As soon as it became clear in the American consciousness that Polk's aim in the Mexican War was to gain southwestern territory, California and what's now the American Southwest, then the slavery question becomes very, very salient in a powerful way that it had been kind of sort of kept under wraps for 20, 25 years.
Robert Merry is an historian and the author of a book about James K. Polk.
So we went through 10 years of kind of political hell in America as we struggled with that issue, which could only be settled through force of arms.
Southerners argued that they had the right to bring slaves into California and New Mexico. Northerners opposed any further spread of slavery, but the real question was a legal one. Did Congress have the power to control or ban slavery in the territories? While Congress debated the issue, the country moved quickly into the presidential campaign of 1848. President Polk was old, tired, and in poor health. He said he would keep his promise to serve only one term. Polk felt that he had done his duty. During the first days of his administration, he listed the goals of his presidency. First, he wanted to reduce the tax on imports. Second, he wished to establish an independent treasury, which the Whigs had voted out. Third, he hoped to settle the Oregon border dispute with Britain. And fourth, he wanted to make California part of the United States. Less than 4 years later, he had succeeded with each item on his list. The United States and Britain agreed on a compromise in the Oregon dispute. In 1846, Polk was able to establish the independent treasury again, where the government could keep its own funds. No longer would government money be kept in private banks. That same year, Polk was able to get Congress to approve a bill that greatly reduced the taxes on imports. And the peace treaty with Mexico gave the United States not only California, but also New Mexico. So the president believed he had served his country well. Polk, however, had not served his party well. He was not a good politician. He failed to unite competing groups within the Democratic Party. What was worse, he let them move even farther apart. There seemed to be no strong Democratic candidate who could unite the party. At one extreme were the supporters of former President Martin Van Buren, New York Democrats opposed to slavery. They were called
barn burners. They got this name from their opponents, who claimed that they were willing to burn down the entire barn to remove pro-slavery rants. At the party's other extreme were the Democrats of the South, led by John C. Calhoun of South Carolina. In every state, the Democrats were divided between those who supported the Polk administration and those who opposed it. Democratic candidates met in Baltimore in May of 1848 to choose their candidate for president. On the fourth vote, the delegates chose Senator Lewis Cass of Michigan as the party's presidential candidate. Cass was 66 years old. He was considered a moderate Democrat. He was a Northerner who did not oppose slavery. On the question of slavery in the new territories, Cass believed that the people living in those areas should make the decision. The barn burner Democrats of New York refused to accept Cass as their candidate. They walked out of the Baltimore convention. Senator Henry Clay of Kentucky expected to be the presidential candidate of the Whig Party. The Whigs had nominated Clay as their candidate in three earlier elections, but Clay lost all three times. In 1848, older members of the party still supported him, but young Whigs felt a new candidate was needed. Some party leaders remembered how William Henry Harrison had won the presidency for the Whigs in 1840 by campaigning as a military hero. The country now had a new military hero, Old Zach, General Zachary Taylor. He and his men never lost a battle in the Mexican War. Several times, General Taylor defeated Mexican forces much larger than his. Taylor was 63 years old. He had almost no formal education. He had spent almost 40 years in the West as an Indian fighter and commander of small army bases. Some politicians did not believe Taylor had the ability to be president, but his supporters put great energy into their campaign. They tried to sell the idea that the general was the only man who could defeat the candidate of the Democratic Party. Finally, Taylor won the Whig Party's nomination. Many Americans did not like either presidential candidate because of the candidate's policies on slavery. Lewis Cass saw nothing wrong with slavery if that was what the people wanted. And Zachary Taylor was a slave owner. So a group of men in Ohio decided to form a new political party. They called it the Free Soil Party, because they believed in free land for free settlers. They wanted no further spread of slavery. The Free Soil leaders proposed a convention of all who supported their ideas. 10,000 people went to the convention in Buffalo, New York. For 2 days, the delegates debated the slavery issue and discussed their choice of a candidate for president. They also worked on a platform, a statement of their party's purpose. The platform declared that slavery was an institution of the states, not the nation. It said Congress had no right to help spread slavery by permitting it in the new Western territories. The platform declared that the issue should be faced with firmness. No more slave states. No more slave territory. No more compromises with slavery anywhere. Convention delegates then voted on candidates. They chose former President Martin Van Buren as the party's candidate. The people of the nation voted on November 7, 1848. It was the first time a presidential election was held on the same day in all parts of the country. Zachary Taylor won both the popular and electoral votes. He became the 12th president of the United States. Congress met a few weeks after the election, long before Taylor took office. It faced serious problems. Territorial governments were needed for the areas won in the war against Mexico. California especially needed help. Gold had been discovered in California. Thousands of people were moving there. A government was needed to protect the lives and property of the new population. Then there was the question of laws forcing northern states to return escaped slaves to their owners. The laws were not always obeyed. Southerners wanted a new law that would be easier to enforce. Congress found it difficult to act on these problems. The House of Representatives was controlled by members of the Free Soil Party, which opposed slavery. The Senate was controlled by Southerners who supported slavery. The two sides found it almost impossible to agree on anything. Early in January 1849, a congressman proposed a bill to first limit and then end slavery in the District of Columbia. Opposition to the bill was strong. It was amended. The new bill would simply close all places in the District of Columbia where slaves were bought and sold. Southern congressmen disliked the bill, even as amended. They organized a committee representing every one of the southern states. Senator John C. Calhoun said the committee should write a declaration explaining the position of the South. The committee agreed, and Calhoun wrote most of the declaration himself. The Southern Declaration accused the North of many aggressions. The South, it said, faced many dangers. Soon there would be enough free states to control both the House and the Senate. And then the Constitution would be changed and all slaves would be freed. And this, said the Southern Declaration, would lead to bitter hostility and war between North and South. The Declaration called on the people of the South to unite and be firm in their opposition to the North. With this new firmness, Southern lawmakers fought to make slavery legal in the new territories. They effectively blocked proposals for territorial governments in California and New Mexico. Congress ended its term on March 4, 1849, without any progress. Zachary Taylor was sworn in as president that same day. Americans hoped that the new president would be able to bring the North and South together again. But Taylor really had no policy. He could not support a bill to keep slavery out of the territories. That might start a quick revolt among the southern states. He could not support a bill to let slavery spread into the territories. That would make the North rise in anger. Taylor tried to be neutral. He hoped the problem of slavery would solve itself.
And that's our program for today. We hope you enjoyed it. Join us again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Ana Mateo.